Come one, come all, come gather around. Come hear tales both lost and found. Finally a show not about true crime. It's David and Michael's story time.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another exciting episode of Story Time.
Not gonna get to start the episode once this year.
The one that lives in the Matrix phone system of the inner corridors of the internet. Well, that's David Miller.
And the one who's changed his outer appearance to more accurately reflect his inside. Well, that's Michael Santel. For the record, that means he got a haircut.
Thank you. That's true. In my inner self, I have a very nice crew cut.
It's just short. Yep.
It's not a long.
Yeah, my hair's getting to that point where it's all wavy now. It's like almost too long, but I don't want to cut it yet. But I do want to cut it. But
when you take baths, do you flip it over your head like Ariel and
when
the Little Mermaid?
When I finish in the shower, I do shake it out like a fucking dog. Yeah.
Speaking of diggity dogs, David, I know some children that are friends with robots that turn into dogs. Where are we going in the Animorph universe?
Hold on. First of all, the robots don't turn into dogs. They are dog-like in appearance. They're dog-like in appearance. They are canine-looking.
They're space dogs.
Kind of. But also, before we did that, I wanted to, I'm loving doing it now, I want to check in with our mailbag.
So David, from what I understand, there's nothing in the mailbag, so what do you know?
There's one message we got a couple days ago, and then also I wanted to check in on what is currently our most popular poll that is going on. we have a poll on all of the episodes so far this year have a poll attached to them, but great. the one that has gotten the most attention was on the last Animorphs episode part 39, which was,
what was the question?
Who is your favorite Animorph? Now when we checked in on it last time, Jake had no votes, or Jake had one vote, Cassie had no votes, two people had voted for David the psychopath. Marco was in the lead by a pretty healthy margin, and then it kind of went down from there. Now my cat is now deciding to use a fucking bell toy that he never uses.
I love that he wanted. I love the good bell toy.
It's fine. If you hear little jingle jangles in the background, everyone, that's he's.
If you hear
himself.
A little Mr. Bojangles in the background, it's just a kitty doing a tap dance number.
What a day. So just to check in on it now, we've had more people vote since we talked about it on air, which I imagine those two facts are related. First of all, Cassie went from no votes to two votes. So people hearing the Cassie gang heard that no one was representing and showed up. So
she doubled her numbers.
She more than doubled. She infinited her numbers from zero to two. Everyone else got a couple more votes, except David. David did not get any more votes, thank God.
Thank God.
Yeah. But Mark, the top three is still currently Marco Tobias Axe with Rachel nipping on Axe's heels there. So
hooves, David. They're hooves.
You're right. That is correct. There are still 65 days left until this poll cannot be voted in, so feel free to get in there if you haven't. That's on Spotify specifically, so, you know. Even if you listen somewhere else, go log into Spotify for a hot second. Give us a vote and a follow if you want.
Sure.
Why not? And then in our mailbag, we did get an email.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Do you know? I'm sure you didn't listen to the episode. Do you know what I did there?
No, David. I haven't had a chance to listen to it.
You
please
told
don't,
me. Don't when is the last time you had a chance to listen to an episode?
Great question.
What was the last full episode that you listened to?
When I got the new microphone. Whenever my old microphone died.
Oh, you
I
wanted to see how you heard?
I just wanted to make sure it was going good.
Did you listen to the whole episode or just enough to hear that you sounded fine? And then
just enough to hear that I sounded fine. I feel the last episode I listened to was the Grinch episode.
Oh, that was a long time. That was years ago at this point. I love your trust in me. I love it. So what I did last episode, you told me to put an actual whale sound at the end of that.
What did you do?
I just put S Club 7 again.
I appreciate you, David. I appreciate you so much.
It hit me in the moment while I was editing. I went and got a whale sound clip and then decided, wait a minute, I have a better joke for this. So we did get an email recently, and it says the subject is fairy tale fan mail, parentheses, open first. So I... I'm not sure what we would have opened first besides the email itself, but we did it.
David, did we get sent anthrax? Is this how we're supposed to find out?
Oh, you know what? I forgot. My computer has been fucking up lately. No.
You got computer anthrax?
So we got an email from Autumn. It says, "Hello, guys. I'm Autumn, she, her, and I've been listening to the podcast for about a year and a half. I came for the fairy tales.
Hey!
And I adore the comedic chemistry that you guys have. The fairy tales are also fantastic to fall asleep to. If this gives me nightmares, I blame the Grimm's brothers, not you. Point being, I grew up when the Animorph books were all around me, but I wasn't a very sci-fi kid, so I never got around to reading them. I had been sort of dancing around the Animorphs episodes because I was intimidated by the sheer number of them, but I decided to take the dive, and I'm so invested now. I'm on book 17 currently. Hopefully I'll catch up in a few weeks. I work at a flannel store, and I listen to...
I gave that dive a 7.5. Also, what is a flannel store?
I know. I work at a flannel store, and I listen to Animorphs while I'm doing menial tasks during our slow season. You guys are so refreshing and funny and cool, and I hope that you can keep up the amazing work you've been doing.
Most of the year slow season for flannel? Isn't it just the cold months when flannel be popping?
Not for me.
Yeah, okay, yeah,
I love a good flannel.
Yes, you do.
I hope you can keep up the amazing work you've been doing. I hope the newest year has found you well. Much love, Autumn. So thanks for writing in. We appreciate
it. I'm
going
to write my response to Autumn right now.
Okay.
Dear Autumn, thank you so much for reaching out to the Storytime Pod.
Yeah.
We are so happy to hear that you enjoy the show. We are so happy to hear that the flannel industry is thriving.
Yeah, yeah.
please tell all your coworkers about us. Don't forget to eat lunch. Have a good shift.
drink lots of water.
Talk to you soon, Autumn. Take care.
Side note from David. Thank you for writing in to say that you started listening for fairy tales, but now you're hooked on Animorphs. I appreciate it.
Side note, asterisk. Please ignore whatever David wrote. This was not his letter, and he has no reason to butt in on this.
It started as a letter for you, and it became a letter for me.
Side note. Alan, please disregard that last interruption to Michael Santel's letter to you. Have a wonderful day. Lots of hugs and kisses to all the good boys and girls. TTYL, Santel.
TTYL. All right. Well, thanks for voting in the polls, everyone. Thanks for writing in. Thanks for responding. We did get a couple other little responses on what did you think of this episode type questions.
Did our enemy come at us again, bro?
No, we have not gotten another email from Lucian is. Yeah, yeah. Someone on Spotify commented that they liked the S Club 7 return. So thanks for that.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Now, to business.
To business.
You've distracted me long enough.
It's business time.
all right. So we are in Animorphs. The last book we had was episode 39, which now I'm blanking on it. It's here in my notes.
You gotta show me the cover.
Oh, the buffalo. It was the buffalo one. Mm-hmm.
Kind of a monster of the week, if you will. One of the more horrific tales that we had in a
big time body horror episode. Cassie had to kill an ant version of herself.
Oh, David, my mom is listening to the show, to Animorphs now, and I had to explain to her why this is bad. She was like, I don't understand what's happening to these kids. I'm like, that's what people don't understand. There is a
war
going on. They feel themselves die all the time. They're not good. They're messed up kids.
The fate of the entire planet rests in these five teenagers' hands.
Barely even teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know exactly how old they are, but I'm still saying like 14.
Max, what?
You know,
14 max was my first AIM name. what is the name of book 40?
Book 40 is called The Other.
Now, question, do I want to know how many other books? I mean, I don't know if we've, I'm sure we've said it. I don't, do I just want to be surprised, though? Want you to tell me?
I'll tell you, because the audience probably wants to know now that you brought it up.
Okay.
We are on book 40. We have one more Megamorphs book left, which, spoiler alert for the previews, is the next book. I have it here in my hand.
Oh, wow.
It's got a black and white cover and everything.
As you say, it's got that Jay-Z cover.
Yeah. So we have one more Megamorphs. We have one more like Chronicles book.
Is that where you choose your own adventure?
No, we're done with those.
Oh man.
Yeah. No, the last of those books is called the Elemist Chronicles. So you're gonna get. And let me tell you, it is the second to last book of the entire series, so we're not going to have it for a while. But let me tell you, it is one of the craziest things that I had ever read, especially at the point in time that I read it. But, like, even still. Like, yeah.
Love it.
But then of the regular books, so that's two books. And then of the regular books, there are 54. So we're on book 40.
Wow.
And then we have 14 more, and then the two. So we're after this book today, we have 16 books left.
David, do you know what other childhood book series you're going to bring to the show? Do you know what other big,
you know,
5-year investment you're going to do next?
As we are coming technically towards the end of Animorphs, which don't get ahead of me because that's still many months away. But I am starting to put thought into, like, generally speaking, what I do after this. And I don't know. I have a couple ideas. I thought things maybe like Sherlock Holmes stories might be fun, but I'm trying to figure out how to present a mystery in the right way without just having to, like, read everything to you.
right. By just telling me what's happening. Right,
but then the details that I choose to, like, tell you and make sure you know is like, oh, are those obvious clues then? Like, I don't know. We'll see. I'm workshopping that one. But I know I mentioned the books that I'm, like, reading for myself. Like these big ass, and I'm on book 2, by the way, of the Stormlight Archive now. And someone did write in being like, oh, the Stormlight Archive, it'd be super cool to hear you do it. But, like, I don't know. I'm thinking about it. But at the same time, like, A, they're relatively new series. So, like, I don't want to step on the toes of someone who's, like, in the process of, like, that series isn't even done yet. So, like, I don't know why I would do that. But also, they're just 1,000-page books that, like, I don't foresee having the time to, like, really do on a good cadence. So
you're not going to do Game of Thrones because it's technically not...
I am definitely not doing Game of Thrones.
It's not finished. And you can't do Lord of the Rings because we never knew how it ended.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, he never wrote more, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, I do have the Lord of the Rings, but, like, you know, I'm reading the Discworld series, which are actually really fun and not super big as books. Like, this is book 2, and it's, like, not a ton. So I might think about that. We talked about Goosebumps at some point. I never read those, so if anything, either I'd have to read them for the first time and present them to you, or you could, you know, whatever. We'll figure that out.
Or we buy all of them and make people read them and then come back and do book reports.
Have someone else do my homework. I think that might be the way to do it.
Yeah.
That'd be a welcome break from the way I usually do this show.
Well, David, if we're going to talk about what we're going to do with this relationship, if we're bringing more people in, we need to have an open conversation.
We sure do.
That being said, let's talk about the other
that's coming in here.
He's a bee boy. He's a bee boy.
Cover,
I can see bees.
We've got Marco turning into a bee. The inside is kind of what you'd expect. It's a bee flying around in a greenhouse. Oops.
Okie dokie. This greenhouse...
Although there is a strange-looking plant, if you look in the corner here.
Yes, yeah. This greenhouse is a greenhouse that is being controlled by the collective, if you will, where they are growing a new...
You mean the Yerkes? By the collective?
Thank you. New fungus weapon, or some sort of plant weapon that will wreak havoc on this earth and of the children. We're going to get a bunch of fun bee facts. Like they're going to do something. Like, everybody know bees do this.
Okay.
And much like the bees that were going to murder in the book I told you, the bees will take down a huge creature. Whether they sting inside of his
eardrums.
Like, we
find out some alien is allergic to bees? Yeah.
Yes. Just like Macaulay Culkin and My Girl. They're just going to take it down by random happenstance.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason why they're going to the greenhouse is like a field trip. They get like, it's like, oh, it's like, we're going to go learn about photosynthesis and stuff.
So what does the other mean?
The other is the gardener who we have not seen, who tends to all these plants, and I'm pretty sure he might be an alien.
Okay. So I'll let you discover whether you're right or wrong on most of your predictions. What I will say is that, in a way, you are absolutely correct that the other is the gardener.
Now, I wonder if the kids Okay, the other thing it could be is the kids think he's actually a Yerk, and then they just find him. The 90s had a number of sad gardener movies. They either have mental handicaps or have been physically deformed. They now are only good for cutting grass and menial tasks. So I hope that I hope he's not a lawnmower man. Like, I hope he's just a normal guy.
Yeah.
But there's a chance that his wife died in the war and now he tends to her flowers.
And he's like never been the same and he just
never been
talk
the same.
All the kids PTSD. Think he's a scary guy. Yeah.
They really should talk to him. He probably cool. would love a friend.
All right, well, we'll find out how right you are. In a way... Okay, all right. All right. So, book number 40, The Other, from the point of view of Marco.
Marco!
Mm-hmm. So, to start things off, Marco is home alone.
Yeah, just like I said in the Home Alone franchise.
His dad and Nora, who is his new stepmom, who's also his math teacher.
He watches her smooch his dad all the time.
They all live in the same house now, so I'm sure that there's,
I'm sure there's smooches.
But he's made his peace. He's made his peace with the fact that she's there, even though he knows that his mother still may or may not be alive. He actually doesn't know if his mother, Visser 1 now, is still alive, because the last they saw her was in the Visser book, where they were in the Yerk pool complex, and they basically were like, okay, you're going back to the Yerks. Hope they don't kill you, you know?
Yeah.
We know that she has been reassigned to, like, another galaxy, but Marco doesn't necessarily know that. All right.
And we know that she cries in the inside a lot.
Yeah, of course. So dad and stepmom are at a PTA meeting, and the poodle.
To be fair, she has to work it, right?
She's gotta go, and so it'd look really terrible if her husband, a parent of a kid at the school, didn't show up to the PTA meeting. And also the poodle Euclid that is there is not there tonight because Euclid is staying overnight at the vet for a minor surgery. It does not say what that surgery is. So
something to do with rocks or something. Yeah, something to do with a hard hat and a shovel.
Yeah. So he's super stoked that, like, he gets a little bit of time to, like, decompress because, like, you know, fighting a war and also being a
seventh grader
in school. Yeah, like, you so much stress. So there's no mission going on. For once, he can just chill on the couch and channel surf. And as he's going through the channels, he's like, nah, I've seen that SpongeBob before. Nah, I don't need that.
David, I used to take so much pride when I remembered every channel.
Yeah.
I knew every channel.
Nickelodeon channel, is channel
32.
Whatever, yeah.
Nickelodeon was 53.
For me,
MTV,
it was 46. Yeah.
39. VH1, 40. MTV2, 62.
And you know what the one that's the same for all of us? UPN 13.
UPN 13, classic. Moesha was the best.
So he's going through the channels and he lands on Unsolved Mysteries and he's like, hell yeah.
Bada, 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 ba, bada, ba. That song scares me. Like, as a kid, you knew something scary was going to happen when that song came on.
So then he's watching Unsolved Mysteries and it's kind of going along, but then it's like, oh, and now after the commercial break, or like, now after the commercials, here's our next story on Unsolved Mysteries. It was just a blue blur moving across the screen. Not much more than that. A small piece of videotape taken with an unsteady hand in terrible light conditions. But it was enough. My foolproof danger alarm went off. Loud. Could this be proof positive of the existence of a magical unicorn of medieval lore? The host
said. Oh no, they saw X!
Or could this strange blue creature be the mighty centaur of Greek mythology? Let's take another look. I hit the power button and the screen went gray. One look had been more than enough. The image was blurred, but unmistakable and alike. So, in my notes, so he doesn't say this actually verbatim in the book, but in my notes, I have, Marco is like, ah, fuck, oh fuck, god damn it. which is my interpretation of his feeling. But essentially, he was sitting down for a cool, chill night, and then it's like, ugh. This means meeting, you know?
Now, if there wasn't an alien invasion, it wouldn't matter that they found out about a blue horse. No one would believe that story
right.
in a million years. But half the town is now alien.
He has to know that the Yerks would have seen that. Like, you know? Yeah. So he runs up to his room, opens the window, morphs bird, and flies off to Axe's scoop in the woods, where Axe lives.
Where he's actively running as fast as he can, just back and forth.
No. They find Axe and Tobias there, like, watching TV, because Axe has his little TV set up in his scoop.
What does he like to watch?
I'll tell you everything. He tells them that, in particular, way back when he first discovered TV, some of his favorite things to watch were these messages.
Okay, he likes commercials.
He loves commercials. Because they're so emotionally potent in such a short time, he said.
You really? Yeah. People used to cry at the AT&T commercials.
Yeah, so Marco was like, all right, Axe, you were on TV. And Axe is like, I guess that's possible. So they pull up the episode because, and this is when we find out, Axe tapes everything. And by everything, I mean like everything on every channel. He has somehow rigged up a hybrid VCR CD-ROM machine out of machine parts that just scans and records every program on every station.
The promise of the 90s. We wanted TiVo so badly. He had to do it. The VHS tapes everywhere.
So they play it back, and Tobias points out, hey, that's not Axe. And it's also not Visser 3. And it's also not, like, Estrid, like the lady Andalite that had just come down.
It's another Andalite!
It seems to be a new Andalite, and the reason he can tell is because that Andalite clearly only has, like, half a tail.
Oh, he's been mortally wounded.
Mm-hmm. Axe reacts strongly to that piece of information and calls him a V-Cole, which is essentially an Andalite term for a disabled slash crippled, quote-unquote.
Is that what the book calls him?
Yes.
Jeez Louise.
This was the 90s, so.
Yeah.
Marco notices in Axe's tone, like, a tone of disgust when talking about a V-Cole. V-Cole. V-E-C-O-L.
V-Cole is a crazy word.
Yeah, but it almost kind of sounds like a slur. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, yeah, and the way that Axe is saying it apparently is not said with a ton of respect.
If you call someone a V-Cole at a bar, there will be
They're going
to
be like, the fuck you say to me?
They're going to throw hands.
And that's how you know they're an Andalite in disguise. So Axe points out, they're like, well, if the Yurks see that, they're going to be like, ooh, cool, let's grab him anyway. But they're like, wait, he must not have the morph power. Otherwise, he'd just morph and then have his tail back.
Right. He can't morph. He's a non-morpher. Yeah.
So he also probably would be useless as a host for the Yurks because at that point he's just a body. He's not a morph capable body.
Okay. Right? That makes sense.
Marco's like, well, they still might want to know like what that Andalite knows. So we need to find him first. Right. Tobias agreed. Best case scenario, he becomes an ally. Axe made a sound that was way too close to a snort. A V-Cole as an ally? Marco, was that meant to be humorous? Because it was not. I grinned, folded my arms across my chest. No, Axe, it wasn't meant to be humorous. What's with you? What is your problem with this guy? Tobias interrupted. Let's get going. We're going to need to talk to Jake and the others. We can deal with this stuff later. I took a deep breath, gave my hair a good yank, straight up, and spoke. Yeah, it's time to find us an Andalite. Oh, I said, looking blandly at Axe. Let's not forget one other possibility here. In spite of the famous throughout the galaxy Andalite honor, this guy could, as we know, quite possibly be a traitor. The whole videotape thing might be a trap for us unsuspecting, big-hearted humans who respond to a creature less fortunate than us with empathy and kindness. That is true, Axe said, while staring back at me with his main eyes. It might very well be a trap.
Is Axe just a piece of shit to, like, handicap people? Does he just see people in wheelchairs and just start laughing?
I'm gonna tell you, this particular book does make me go, Axe, not a great look. I will say, and we'll find out, but it seems to be a cultural thing with Andalites.
Oh, jeez. Okay, so we can't talk about it because we don't want to offend the culture.
It's another example of how, like, all the Andalites and Axe are like, well, we are the most noble, most honorable, bestest, best race in all the galaxy. And every other alien species is like, Andalites are assholes, dude. Like, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So it's, mm-hmm. you know.
They know about, what's his name's gift. Maybe they should fucking get
Zero's
some humble.
Gift. Yeah,
maybe they need Zero's humble pie.
So they decide to go right away rather than, like, getting the others. Like, Jake and Rachel are at some family thing. Cassie's at, like, a vet thing with her mom. Like, so they decide to go right away. Tobias leads them to where he's pretty sure the video was taken because he knows the woods, like, so fucking well.
Why does he know the woods?
Because he lives in the woods.
Oh, okay. I thought
he's a bird.
Yeah, understood.
Marco morphs to owl because it is the evening. They look for anything suspicious in the area, a sign of struggle, blood, anything. They can't find anything. So they're like, all right, well, we're going to go home then. We'll talk to everyone else in the morning about it. But we need to demorph and remorph because we've been in morph for too long. So they land and start to demorph together, Marco and Axe. And then Marco kind of looks over and he's like, oh, look, a possum. And then that possum starts growing.
Oh, it does have the changing ability.
And demorphing. And it demorphs into an Andalite who is not Visser 3. And this Andalite is huge. He is buff, jacked, bodybuilder body on, but, like, Clydesdale horse body.
Does he have a fucked up tail?
Muscly tail. Yeah. So they all stare silently at each other for a while. And Tobias is like, well, I'm going to distract him because he hasn't seen me yet. So Tobias starts to dive at him. And Axe is like, wait, hold on a second. But then the guy's tail barely twitches, it seems. And Tobias is thwapped out of the sky and lands with a thud and is not moving.
Yeah.
So add another mark to is Tobias dead or not tally sheet. Axe tells Marco, don't move. And then he and the other Andalite have, like, a small little scuffle, like a scrap. And
is that what they call? Is that what they call when their tails clang together?
Yeah, they're clanging and they're dodging. They're trying to thwap at each other. And Axe gets thwapped right with the flat of the guy's tail. Bam! And gets knocked over. And the strong one then has Axe, like, has his blade up to Axe's throat and calls him Visser 3. And is like, finally, Visser 3, we meet. And Axe is like, oh, no, no. I am not Mr. Three. I am Maximili Escruth Isthil. And the guy, he, like, seems surprised, and he goes, oh, Elfangor's brother? And he's like, the same. Yep, that's the one. And so he asks Axe, oh, did you survive the dome ship crash too? And Axe was like, I thought I was the only one.
No, there's other survivors.
Yeah. And Axe explains he thought he was the only one until he saw that V-Call on TV. And then as soon as he says that V-Call, the strong one, like, blows up and is like, he has a name! And that name is Myrtle Iskar Elmand.
Myrtle Elmand!
Myrtle Elmand. And Axe is like, oh, I know that name. That is a very honored and talented and famous fighter pilot.
Did he get handicapped in one of his...
Not as far as Axe knows.
Okay.
And Axe is like, well, who the fuck are you? And this big strong one is like, his name is Gefinilan Estrif Vlad.
Yeah, Vlad it is.
or Gefinilan.
Elman and Vlad.
Gefinilan. Axe has heard of him as well. He is also one of the finest and most respected fighter pilots.
Okay.
So Axe starts to ask him for help, since he knows that the fleet, like, hey, we know that the Andalite fleet has been sent somewhere else, and they are not coming here anytime soon.
Could we implore you about, there's a civil war going on, could you help us?
Would you please think about joining us in our fight against the Yerks? And Gefinilan is like, I don't have to do anything. I'm not a warrior anymore. My only job is to care for Myrtle, who was injured in the dome ship battle and crash.
So because Elman got so messed up in PTSD, he's now on vacation. He doesn't have to fight in the army anymore.
And basically Gefinilan is like, so leave us alone. Don't.
But they sent them to Earth?
They were also in the fleet, like in the dome ship or in the fighter ship that crashed in that big battle. Like the one where Elfangor came down and crashed at the construction site. Same battle as where they...
But they've... Yeah. Okay, so they've been here
on Earth. They crashed to Earth since then.
Right. In another place, and we just found out about them on Unsolved Mysteries.
Because they've been laying low. And because Unsolved Mysteries found them. Tobias stirs on the ground a little bit. He's not dead. So that answers that question. And then Gefinilan says, now go, Arist Aximili. Take your friend and leave this place. Visser 3 will be here at any moment, and he will not be as merciful as I have been, I assure you. For your own good, Aximile, Gefinnilan said harshly, forget that you ever saw me. Forget about Myrtil. That is an order. Forget. Gefinnilan turned away from us, all four eyes forward as he walked towards the dark woods, away from the revealing light of the moon. At the edge of the woods, he stopped. He did not turn around, not even his eyes. I wish you luck on your mission, Aximile, you and your comrades, even though it is hopeless. Great. Love to hear that.
Never going to beat them. We're never coming here. This is all... Resistance is futile.
So then Marco, the next chapter starts and Marco goes, so we followed him. Of course we did.
They double backed and watched where he was going.
And he's even like, and we assume that he figured we were going to follow him. Like, or at the very least, he would probably assume that's a possibility. Marco is thinking about how, fuck, like, he saw me demorph. Like, now he knows that I'm a human.
Right, and now that we know that they have morphing abilities, they are now more attractive to the other side.
And he's like, and now that, just the fact that that guy saw me means he's a liability. If he ever gets captured, now their secret is burned, right?
This is exactly how the mob talks. They gotta take this guy the fuck out, David. He can't be, he's seen
Marco
too much.
Marco literally says to us, like, I just wondered how long he'd be alive knowing what he knows now. Like, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah. So they follow him for a while until they almost lose him in like a Marco morphs wolf, I think, to follow him by scent. They kind of lose him at this like small little cave that they find. And then like a human man comes out of the cave and he's like a super average, forgettable looking guy is what he says. Like the guy that could just fade into any crowd because he is so unremarkable in his appearance. You know?
Sure. Mr. Smith.
Yeah. A quote, he was the kind of guy who could disappear into a crowd instantly, the kind of guy who would blend, the kind of guy Jake might have become if fate hadn't chosen a spectacularly odd path for him.
I never thought of Jake as average looking, though. I thought he was...
He's just like a normal ass kid. Like,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
As normal as could be until you find out his whole life is crazy. So the human guy, like, leaves, and they confirm, they go in the little cave, and they confirm that there are no, like, secret doors, secret entrances. This isn't a Yurk pool entrance, as far as they can tell. And so that must be him in human morph, right? So Tobias catches up to him and finds him reaching a very average-looking neighborhood near, like, the university. The university. So this city has a university. Another point for San Diego.
Another point for San Diego!
He walks up and lets himself into a house in this neighborhood. And he looks kind of, like, nervously around as he, like, unlocks the door with a key and goes inside. And Marco decides, okay, now it is time to fill the others in on this whole thing. We gotta get the gang together. So they have a meeting at the barn the next morning before school. Besides being less than thrilled about Gefinnilan seeing Marco morph, they're wondering why he didn't seem to have any interest in the fact that Marco could morph. Like, every other animorph that has found out that humans could morph have been like, the fuck? How did that happen? And Gefinnilan didn't even mention it.
When they say that, is that more of... why do they have this ability? Or is it more of, oh, your physiology can also
do this thing? It's more along the lines of, who gave that to you?
Okay. Right. That's the most coveted piece of technology is the morphing ability.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They also wonder why he didn't seem interested in how Axe knew that the fleet wasn't coming or anything like that. Like, he didn't ask about that, right?
He knows more than he's letting on.
They also wonder why or how he thought that Visser 3 would be here any moment, right? He's like, you guys should get out of here. Visser 3 is going to show up here, so you should leave, right? And they're like, well, how would he have known that unless, is there some relationship with Visser 3? Like, does he, you
right.
know, like, he thought Axe was Visser 3, and he did say like, oh, finally I get to challenge you or whatever. But he clearly doesn't know what Visser 3 looks like by look because he thought Axe was him.
Right.
Right.
And he clearly doesn't know how a possum works.
Axe says that this Andalite's reputation is flawless. So it doesn't surprise him that he was like aggressive at them or anything
Yo,
like that.
Listen, I'm going to ask you this. Are the Andalites the bad guys? because the more you talk about them, it's like, oh, they think they're the best, they're handsomely dressed, and Hugo Boss outfits, it's like, those are Nazis, right?
Bro, I'm going to tell you, maybe.
David, it's that sketch, are we the baddies?
Are we the baddies?
Like, yeah. I don't know, I feel like X might be like a weird, like, Nazi youth.
You know what?
Oh, maybe.
What we've seen is that while the Andalites do have good ideals and technology and all of that thing,
they never follow through with it. And we see flawed individuals all the time that pursue selfish means all the time.
Yep. It's almost like you can't put an entire race of beings into one category of good or evil. Because we've even seen individual Yurks. Like, there's that Yurk that was leading the resistance movement of Yurks that Cassie
liked. It's like you can't put the cart before the horse, David. I don't think that's an accurate saying. I don't think
it's that right. It's a true saying. I just don't think it works in this setting.
Yeah, I get you.
So this Andalite's reputation is otherwise flawless. Like, he doesn't believe he would be a traitor, at least from what he knows of this guy.
Right. He doesn't believe his actions are a traitor, because that's what he chooses to believe.
Axe doesn't believe that this guy would be it. Anyway, so Jake decides we need more information.
Sierra's calling. What do I do? We can't stop. We're in the middle of a story.
Answer it.
Just a second.
I would have told you to ignore it if I knew you were just gonna answer the phone and then say, I'm not talking to you, goodbye.
I'm not gonna interrupt recording. We're doing something right now, David. I've made one. Make your commitments, okay? I made a commitment to you. I'm gonna stand by
it. I get it. All right, so Jake decides they need more information. So Tobias and Cassie and Rachel are gonna fly to his house and, like, watch him through the day to see if he goes and works anywhere or whatever, until Cassie and Rachel have to go to school, then Tobias will continue watching him. And they want to make sure that he doesn't, like, work at, like, a Yurk place, right?
Right.
That he doesn't work at the Sharing. He doesn't work at that newspaper office or, like, whatever, right? Known Yurk places. The Gap. there's a Yurk entrance in the Gap.
So. I hear you. It's at the
McDonald's.
Mall.
Although that McDonald's was destroyed a couple books ago.
Yeah, it got hit.
Axe and Marco are going to visit Gifinilan at the house, like, pay a visit to, as an official visit on behalf of Axe's prince.
Okay, they're going to they'll play along with the mores of their society.
Yes. Marco skips early out of school to join Tobias in watching the house. They find out the human name for Gifinilan is Mr. Henry McClellan.
McClellan.
Yeah. There is nothing overtly Yurky about where he works. He works as an assistant for some academic at the university, like a particle physicist, which is like, well, that makes sense. He's like an Andalite, so he would, like, kind of know a bunch of that stuff, and it would be easy for him to sort of fake.
Makes sense to me.
The house that he is in has a greenhouse attached to it in the backyard.
Hot dog!
Henry, or Gifinilan, had received some phone call at work that seemed to, like, shake him up, and then he rushed home and is there now when Marco gets to the house. Tobias has seen no sign of Myrtle, the other Andalite, or another person for that matter, they spot Gifinilan in Andalite form in the greenhouse pruning some leaves.
With his tail? Or is he a human?
I think it was saying he was working shears.
Oh, okay.
But it does make me laugh to think that he prunes it with his tail blade.
I like the idea that he has to, like, turn into a human to, like, use fingers and then turns back into the horse thing to, like, prune him off.
So Marco swoops in closer to see more. But before he doesn't, like, touch the house or the greenhouse or anything, but then he gets zapped by a force field that apparently is around the house.
Oh, okay.
And he tries to fly away, but Gifinilan grabs a shredder and shoots off one of his talons as, like, a warning shot, and then demands that he land and demorph.
He's going to land really funny, though, because he's missing a foot.
So Marco does, and he and Marco have words, and He basically asks, oh, so you are a human. I thought that's what I saw, but it was dark the other night. Who gave you that power? And Marco is basically like, does it matter? Like, you know, I'm not telling you. And also straight up accuses him of being a traitor. Like, you're working with Visser 3. Fuck you. And the guy does not react well to that.
No, he does not.
He puts his blade to Marco's throat. And then Axe shows up to stop him and says, hey, Marco is an enemy of the Yerkes. If you harm him right now, you will prove yourself a traitor. And Gefinnilan is like, ugh, fine. But he only wants to talk to Axe's prince. And Jake. Marco, yeah, yes, but he doesn't know that it's just Jake. Yeah. And Marco is like, well, tough. We're here now. So if you're only going to talk to him, then I guess we're done here. And starts to walk away. And Gefinnilan is like, no, hold on. But then Marco notices like a slight tremor, like a subtle shiver in the Andalite. And he kind of stops himself and he goes, fine, come inside. Jake then, in thought speak, lets Marco know, hey, the rest of us are here now and in position if you need backup. Right? And so then Marco and Axe go inside, and it is like an impeccably decorated house, although it looks like it's not used at all. It's like a catalog spread, Martha Stewart home living design.
Do you think it's a projection? Or did they just steal somebody?
I think it is a furnished house. It's just that it's just for looks.
All right. Mid-century modern. Looks
just
great.
Just to keep the pretense of being a human. They then are led to like a separate part of the house, kind of like a little hidden part of the house, like a room within a room. And it is more suitable for Andalites. There's like some grass on the ground. There's some salvaged computer equipment. And the force field generator also is in there. But he sees no Myrtle. There is no other Andalite. There is no other person in here.
Yo, Myrtle's that weird fungus thing in the greenhouse.
And so Axe asks him why he isn't interested in joining their fight against the Yerkes. Like, what's your deal? Why aren't you doing that? And Gefinnilan tells them that he and Myrtle came up in the academy together. They each earned renown for their feats of heroism in the war. And during the battle with the Blade Ship, his fighter, Gefinnilan's fighter, was hit. And the engine was completely destroyed. And his ship almost immediately crashed into Myrtle's. And then they, like, locked together and fell together to Earth. And Gefinnilan was, like, had some broken bones, but was, like, otherwise fine. But Myrtle was badly wounded. And while he recovered from his, like, grievous wounds, his tail was irreparably destroyed, basically. And he cannot morph. He is unable to have the morphing power.
Because of the injury?
No. They'll talk about it later, but essentially, basically, like, it's like he has, like, an allergy or something to the morphing technology.
Oh, no. So like bees! Like bees! He's allergic to bees!
he is unable to use it, so he's stuck. So Marco is like, hey, that Myrtle sounds like a cool guy. I'd love to meet him. And both Axe and Gefinnilan are, like, horrified, like, pearl-clutching, like, what? You want to talk to a vehicle? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I think it's Axe that says, it is unthinkable to intrude upon the isolation of a vehicle. His isolation is the only dignity he has. Which is not a great... That's still not a great look for...
I never want you to say that about me to anybody, please. Don't ever describe
his
that.
Isolation is the only dignity he has.
Yeah, that's... No, just invite me to come out more. Let me know what the plans are.
Well, we're saying this now to each other, but Marco says to them, your attitude about the differently abled sucks.
Yes, thank you for taking the moral high ground.
Yeah. Gefinnilan turns to Axe then and says, hey, will you join me in partaking of some Illispar root?
And that he grew, that he's growing
that
he's, out there.
That he grows in, correct. And
tastes like Dr. Pepper.
And Marco notes, like, he's like, sometimes when Axe is in human morph and he sees Cinnabons, he gets this, like, look in his eye that is, like, a clear craving. He's like, I saw that same look in Axe's eye when the guy mentioned Illispar boot. And so Axe is like, yeah, absolutely. Hook me up. So they go to the greenhouse, And they Marco kind of notes that, like, oh, this Gavindelin guy is clearly talented at gardening. Like, he's got a green thumb. This place is bristling with plant life. They take this root and they stamp on it because that's how they eat shit. And they kind of trance out. And so Marco, like, realizes, like, they are not paying attention to me at all right now. So he starts snooping around the house. He swats at a couple bees. There are, like, bees that are flying around the greenhouse. And he, like, swats at a couple, and he's like, oh, fuck. And then he gets an idea, and he grabs one and starts to acquire it. And he does that as the Andalites sort of come out of their trance, and, like, Gavindelin looks at him. And so he, like, has to, like, you know, sort of surreptitiously let the bee go afterwards, and it stings him in the hand. So he's like, ah, he can't, like, react overtly to being stung in the hand. And Gavindelin then asks them to please extend an invitation to their prince so that he may come and enjoy a taste of his home world.
Ooh.
Referring to the Illispar root, yeah.
Oh, he thinks the prince is Andalite.
He sure does. And I have in my notes, they're like, yep, sure, yeah, you betcha, uh-huh. Like, we'll let him know. So then they all meet up at the mall to, like, talk about what just happened. And they all, like, meet at the mall separately. Like, they pretend to accidentally run into each other at the mall. And then they're like, oh, you want to go grab something from the food court? Yeah, let's go. And they all do that thing. And so Jake wants to go meet this guy tomorrow. He's like, fine.
Jake's holding a corn dog on his stick.
Axe clearly has Cinnabons. He absolutely has Cinnabons.
Marcos has Sbarro's. He's got that one weird pizza.
Oh, you know, I wouldn't put it past him to have a pizza. I imagine he got a burger.
But okay.
Yeah.
Cassie has
salad.
Well, I was gonna say, or a chicken sandwich.
Maybe. I don't know if they've ever said, but I feel like Cassie might try to be a vegetarian.
Okay. And then Rachel has a salmon.
A salmon? Oh, because she's a bear?
Yeah, she's just like, it, like, crossed over. She's like, I'll have the salmon.
You love that mall salmon, don't you? That yeah, 90s well, you know, mall salmon.
Sometimes it's good.
So Jake wants to go meet this guy tomorrow. Marco still has a bad idea. Something doesn't feel right about this guy. So they adjourn. Jake and Cassie go to walk home. Tobias and Axe are like, all right, we're going to head out and go back to the fucking woods. And Rachel hangs back. And so it's just Rachel and Marco, like, left at this table in the food court. And Marco says,
he dips his pizza in ranch.
I mean, I know people do that.
And I don't people are weird.
So, it was me and Rachel alone. I puffed out my chest and smiled. Any particular reason you wanted to be alone with me, Rachel? Yeah, so I could watch you act stupid. The usual. She leaned back in her seat. I mean it, Marco. I am not in the mood. I put my hands up, conceding defeat. Okay, so a lot of times you're a major cynical freak, you know? I barked a laugh. Thanks, I guess. But you're also the best at knowing when something genuinely stinks. I can block out your lame jokes, but I can't ignore your paranoid instincts. Gee, thanks again, I said. Rachel frowned. I mean it. Look, you're not letting Jake meet Gavindelin before you go back there yourself. Don't bother to deny it. You have a plan. I want to know what it is. Quickly, casually, I glanced around. Why? So you can tell your bird boyfriend and screw me up with Jake? No, you moron, Rachel hissed. So I can go with you. You'll need someone to cover your butt. See, I knew you cared. Wham! And that's when Rachel's foot connected squarely with my shin. There's no time to test his bee morph because they gotta go check this out right now. So he just had time to look up bees really quick on the internet. I imagine he goes to that cyber cafe that we see in the show to look stuff up.
He navigates the Beast Wars characters to the search engine and types in bee facts.
He is terrified to learn that bees, like ants, are social insects.
No.
Although not exactly the same, category of thing. But we gotta go try. So they fly to the house and watch as birds for a while. He sees a bee flying along. He's like, how are the bees getting into the house if there's a force field up? So he sees a bee flying along in a sort of erratic pathway.
Are they ground bees?
No, but it like flies in a very certain weird way and gets to a window and goes in through this window. And he's like, oh, there must be, like, a small hole in the force field to allow for this.
Mm-hmm.
So Rachel's like, okay, well, you're going to need to follow another bee in, like, real close, so you don't get zapped. So they find the hive that these bees are coming from. Marco morphs to bee and gets caught up in it for a second, and then regains control after much yelling from Rachel. What's wrong with you, she snapped. It's a stupid honeybee. Sorry, but I'm not sure I'd call the bee stupid. You need individuality and sentience to be stupid, don't you? As compared to smart or silly or whatever? I guess, Rachel conceded. Anyway, it's not nearly as bad as being an ant. You know how ants are just programmed parts of a whole? It's kind of like that, only not so aggressive. It's sort of like I'm part of a big farm family. All for one and one for all, while we bring in the crop and feed the next generation and pay homage to the queen. That's what communism is all about, I mused. I mean, Castro's like a king when you think about it. So, bees are communists is...
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, that tracks. So Marco spots a couple of bees exiting the hive and flying towards the greenhouse, so he goes to follow. Suddenly, another bigger bug swoops down and grabs the bee that's in front of him, like, with these, like, barbed legs.
And it's a Japanese hornet.
And stabs it and just sucks it dry right there in the air and, like, lets it go, and it just falls as a husk to the ground. And then it swoops around and comes right back for Marco. And it grabs him, and he's like, oh, God, I'm about to die. And he feels the tip of the needle, like, on his back. And then there's a big, like, whoosh, and Rachel swoops in and, like, as her in her eagle morph, she cuts this bigger bug in half. So Marco, like, falls to the ground. She carries Marco away. They reset. Take a breather. And try again.
Have a Capri Sun.
Yeah. And they try again. Okay. And so he follows another bee inside. And this time Rachel's like looking out. She's like, okay, there are no more of that bug anywhere that I can see. So he goes, follows this bee. And when he gets close enough, he can like see the force field with like the bee vision. And he sees there's like this little curved tunnel like in the force field. So he gets inside. Right as he, like, gets in, he sees Gafinilan, like, go out to the greenhouse from the house. And so Marco flies into the house. And the door is left open between the house and the greenhouse. Like, Marco noticed when they were in last time that he doesn't, like, seem to close it. So He's not too worried about that. But so he flies in the house, and as a bee, he flies around. And he, like, the bee has a pretty good sense of, like, smell. So he's, like, smelling. He distinctly can smell Gafinilan. Like, it's a very distinct andalite, that particular andalite smell. And so he flies around this whole house, and the one thing he can conclude is that another andalite, Myrtle, has not been here for some time.
Because there's no stink particles.
There's no scent, yeah. So they leave, and they go back to the others meeting at the barn. Jake is pissed that they went and did this little side mission themselves. So he's mad at Marco, but it doesn't really surprise him about Marco. He's mad at Rachel and disappointed in Rachel for going along with it. But then Jake is like, okay, so taking the information that Marco had, he's like, is Myrtle even real? Like, is that even a real dude? And Axe is like, I promise you, he was a real andalite. Like, I don't know if he's here, but
We saw video footage of
him. Well, and also Axe remembers him from, like, back in the day, right? And then Axe realizes something. Gafinilan offered me Illispar root, Axe explained. It is a mild intoxicant, taken in a manner somewhat like humans take tea or coffee each morning. But Illispar root also has a medicinal use as well. In great quantities, it eases the pain of Sula's disease. This is a genetically programmed disease. It causes increasing pain in the joints as well as muscles, extreme at the end. In some, it causes progressive blindness, which might explain why Gafinilan didn't exactly see Marco that night, or thought that Axe was Visser 3, because he just saw the shape of an andalite.
This sounds like space arthritis.
Kind of. It strikes in the prime of life and is always fatal.
Oh, so sad.
Okay, Jake said. I still don't understand what this has to do with us. And I don't understand, Rachel began, why if Gafinilan has the disease, he can't cure himself by morphing. Oh, wait. Yes, I do. His own DNA has the disease. It's like he's trapped. Axe inclined his head. Exactly. The only cure is to acquire and then morph another andalite, one without the defective gene that predisposes towards the disease. In other words, the victim of Sula's disease must abandon his imperfect body and become a Nothlet. Tobias looked at Axe with an intensely fierce hawk's eyes. Sounds reasonable. No. An Andalite society choosing to become a Nothlet in such a situation or for such a purpose is considered an act of cowardice, morally wrong, and despicable.
So is L-Man actually Vlad?
Well, so this big buff one has this disease.
Right, but then, but are they actually the other one?
Well, if he was the other one, he wouldn't have this disease anymore. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay. No. You're right. Continue.
And I think Cassie is like, well, how come we haven't seen him exhibit pain then? And Axe is like, well, as a warrior, he's trained not to show his pain. But as the disease progresses, it will eventually become impossible to hide his agony. They think that part of his plan is to acquire another Andalite. At first, they thought maybe Myrtle, but apparently not. Or if Myrtle's not there, I don't know. And then they're like, well, what about Axe? And he's like, well, Axe is like, no, he wouldn't choose me because I'm still an adolescent. He probably wants Visser 3. And then Jake assumes that he wants Jake.
Oh.
Because he assumes that Jake is a royal Andalite prince.
Yeah, and then he could go home and get privileges and stuff like that.
Well, if anything, he would have an adult, strong Andalite body that isn't as dangerous to acquire as Visser 3, right? Mm. Marco thinks that he murdered Myrtle. He's like, somehow, I think that he killed this guy, and I think that he will do the same to Jake as soon as he finds out that he's not an Andalite he can acquire.
Right.
Cassie asks if they could use the blue box to, help Myrtle if they do find Myrtle and give him the power to morph. And Axe is like, no, this is where he's like, no, he probably has, an allergy to it, which is why he would have it already if he could.
Right.
And Jake is like, fuck it, I need to meet him then. Like, this has to happen. So the plan is everyone but Jake enters the house as bees, and Jake walks up as a human and rings the doorbell.
and then his bee friends follow him.
Well, they go in through the little hole that Marco found. So they're, already inside when Jake is brought in. Jake is brought in after the door opens, slightly, and Jake is like, Gifinilan? And he's like, no, I'm Henry McClellan. There's no one else here. And he's like, no. Aximile sent me. I'm Jake. And the guy's like, oh, okay, come in. And he's very cordial. He invites him in. He
yells at the kid at the door, I said I do not want your earth cookies. How many times? I said no.
He leads him to the little Andalite zone within the house. Marco follows them in there while the others stay out by the greenhouse and, get ready, as in demorph, remorph.
Right.
Jake, the guy keeps asking Jake about stuff. Was there much salvage from the dome ship? Did this and that? And Jake is being very cagey. Marco observes, Jake is giving him nothing as far as information goes. Right?
Okay.
Was there much salvage from the dome ship? Jake's response, instead of being like, no, we didn't get anything or, whatever, is just the dome ship was almost completely destroyed. That is it,
Got it.
So Gifinilan demorphs to Andalite and is like, why aren't you demorphing, Jake? And Jake is like, I prefer to speak to you in this form. And so then he gets aggressive. Gifinilan gets aggressive when Jake asks, listen, cut the shit. What do you really want from me? And he gets into an attack posture, but then stumbles all of a sudden and all of his eyes close. And Marco notes he is clearly fighting off intense pain.
The space arthritis.
Mm-hmm. And then he regains his composure. And then rather than come at Jake with his tail blade again, he just grabs a shredder and points it at Jake. And it's like, now you will do what I say.
I am the captain now. Does he tell him I am the captain now?
No, but he same vibe.
Sure.
And then he says, if you think I will show you mercy because you appear as a child, you are mistaken. Jake stood perfectly still. What if I am a child? He said calmly, as if a shredder were not leveled a few feet from his face. Back up on the way, Jake, I said. Gifinilan's tail twitched. You bore me with this game. For an Andalite warrior, you are not particularly clever. Roar! From the direction of the greenhouse came the menacing roar of a grizzly, the lonely howl of a wolf, the blood-curdling screech of a raptor. Gifinilan jerked towards the sounds, and then there was one loud ba-boom as Rachel crashed through one of the walls like a baseball crashing through a window, but making a lot more mess. Cassie, Axe, and Tobias followed almost daintily through the rubble. I'm sorry that we bore you, Gifinilan, Jake said calmly, but we're bored too. Tired of your evasions and half-truths, so if it's okay with you, this is the moment of reckoning. Time to come clean. Four warriors against one, Gifinilan blustered. Five, if I morph, I said, having demorphed from behind the weapons table, walking around to face our host. Six, if Jake does. But we're not here to fight, Gifinilan, Jake said, just to get some information. Gifinilan's two stock eyes swiveled madly for a second, and then a look of shocked understanding came to them. You, all of you, you are the Andalite bandits that Visser III fears. Are all of you but eximally human? Yes, Jake said. He shot a glance at Tobias. More or less. We were enlisted by Prince Elfangor to fight the Yerks. So Gifinilan is insulted that they thought he was trying to acquire an Andalite to become a Nothlet. He's like, that would be cowardice. I'm not doing that. And Tobias and Cassie are like, you know, like, we wouldn't judge you if you were trying to save yourself from this disease. Like, we don't do that here.
we're cool, man. We're not here to judge you.
And he's like, you don't understand. It is true. I have Sula's disease, but I have what I have done, I have not done for myself. I have done for Myrtil. You see, nobody understands. I suppose there is no reason to keep the truth from you. Some human, some meddlesome, possibly innocent human, stumbled upon Myrtil feeding. Visser III saw the tape. Whether on television or in some other way, I do not know. But it was enough. Myrtil was seized by the Yerks. Only then did the Visser discover that Myrtil was a V-Cole. Of course, the Yerks have no use for a mere cripple. I don't like using the word in that context, but...
No. Yeah. You read what's in front of you.
especially one who is not morph capable. Blackmail, I guessed? Yes, the Visser used Myrtil to find me and offered to exchange... And I offered to exchange myself for Myrtil. After all, it was my fault he had been seen by a human. I should have protected him more carefully. But Myrtil anticipated my action. In an effort to save my life, he informed the Visser of my medical condition. The Visser has no more use for an Andalite with a several-month life expectancy than he does for a V-Cole. I suppose you could be grateful for that, Cassie commented. Gifinilan turned an eye stalk in her direction. We all want to be wanted, he remarked quietly. The Visser still wants something from you, Jake said. Oh yes, Visser III is quite clever and quite cruel. He offered me a trade. If I bring him a healthy, morph-capable Andalite, he will release Myrtil to me. And you trust him? Rachel spat. What choice do I have? Trust and act, or do nothing and wait for news of Myrtil's murder? When I unexpectedly encountered young Aximile, I did not hesitate to bait my trap. Axe interrupted. You are willing to betray one of your own people to the Yerks in exchange for your friend's life? For the life of a mere V-Cole? For me, Gifinilan stated, it is not about action traitorous to my world. For me, it is personal. For me, it is about friendship.
Great. Again, this is these high ideals that all go out the window on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm. So the Animorphs, even though they were just told, I was planning on turning one of you into Visser III, basically all immediately volunteer to help save Myrtil.
Oh, thanks, kids!
And Gifinilan resists and is like, no, I couldn't send children to fight my battles. And Jake, being the fucking general that he is like, look, this is our mission now, so you either accept that or you sit it out.
Yeah.
And Myrtle's like, fine. Or Gifinilan is like, fine. So Myrtil is kept on the move in case Gifinilan decided not to actually turn someone in and attack. Like, if they kept him at the Yerk Pool, they were afraid of another attack on the Yerk Pool. So they start to brainstorm, but then Axe has a bit of an outburst. It was kind of a lot of reading today. Axe interrupted. We cannot risk our lives for a V-Cole. Okay, Axeman, I said, my voice a little less than steady. I've been cutting you slack on this handicap thing because you're part of this team. But when you talk like that, this guy is some sort of dirty, worthless thing. I have to say that you're just not one of us. I do not and have never pretended to be human, Axe stated. Rachel snorted. You're so full of it, Marco. I seem to recall you're calling that Hewlett Aldershot guy who was in a coma a vegetable. No, wait. I think it was a carrot, to be exact. Not the same thing, I shot back. That was black comedy, gallows humor, not an open or implied insult. Actions do speak louder than words, Cassie said quietly. Thank you. I might not always say the right thing, but most times I do the right thing, or try to, at least. My intentions, I added, smirking, are good. This is not about Marco, Tobias said. This is about Myrtil. Myrtil is Gefinnerland's Shorm, Axe. Can't you understand? Whether Axe understands or not, Jake interrupted, we're doing this. Is that understood? Good. Gefinnerland, you've been in contact with Myrtil? Myrtil and I have been the closest of friends since our childhood. Unless we are on different planets, we can hear each other's thought speak. Not perfectly, often exact words are not clear, but the sound of Myrtle's voice is always with me. It helps me know that he is alive. So what, Rachel said. Bird morphs cover every inch of the town until we get close enough to Myrtle for Gefinnerland to hear specifics. Hope that Myrtle has been able at least to get a glimpse out a window or something. So that's the plan.
It's not a good plan!
It's not much of a plan.
It's not much of a plan other than their psychic link.
Yeah. So they set off. Marco is still unsure that Gefinnerland won't just try to cut a deal with Visor 3. And he tells Jake as much. And Jake is like, well, we're doing this. And Marco's like, okay, well, while you trust him, I'm going to prepare a plan in case this goes the other way.
Okay.
And Jake is like, fine, that's what you're here for. Like, you know. So they figure out that Myrtil is currently at an old abandoned train yard. They get there, but they don't really see anyone, but Gefinnerland swears, the like,
famous,
this is the place.
Abandoned San Diego train yard.
They then spot a couple dozen Hork-Bajir getting out of a couple of train cars, so they're like, oh, this must be the place. Night is falling, so it's getting dark. They watch from a distance. Hork-Bajir are forming up around a U-Haul truck, kind of in the middle of the train yard, and they're like, well, he must be in that truck. And the Myrtil, now in like thought speak range of Gefinnerland, tells them that he overheard talk of their next destination, but has not heard where that is. So Jake orders Tobias as air support and like guidance through the train yard in the dark, and everyone else to battle morph. Gefinnerland's like, I want to fight too, and Jake is like, okay, but like, if you start to feel like you can't handle it physically, you need to take yourself out of the equation because we can't have to double back to, like, rescue a second Andalite.
Is this a rainy...
It's not rainy, no.
Okay, so this isn't, like, the train yard that Shadow almost died at?
No. It's dark and abandoned. Okay. There's rusty shit everywhere. There's a bunch of train cars, but it's not rainy.
Because Sassy and Chance get out of the train yard just fine, but Shadow almost dies.
Oh, I remember.
It's very emotional.
So, normal battle morphs, except that Rachel goes elephant instead of bear.
Great.
Yeah. Myrtil finally, faintly, in thought speak, just tells them, like, get out of here. You guys, you just go. And it, like it says, it sounds super fucking disheartened. and Marco tells Gefinnerland, like, hey, tell Myrtil that we're on our way. We got it. Numbers-wise, it's rough. Marco says, but at least we have the element of surprise. And then, almost immediately, a Hork-Bajir goes, Andalites! And sirens go off. The classic every session where you guys in our D&D games try to sneak in somewhere.
It's only me that usually fucks it up, though.
Because you yell at the first person you see.
I do, and David always makes it canon, so that's what we gotta do.
Of course
with.
I do. You're sneaking through a place, you see a bad guy, and you go, hey, you!
To be fair, that character was a dog, yeah. And like that's why I played it that way.
A dog who statted himself out to be stealthy. So
funny. Yeah, but he was still a
so
dog.
Funny.
Like
it was so funny.
He did the best he could.
So, a fight breaks out. Hork-Bajir rush in, and everyone sort of starts spreading out, trying to act like they have greater numbers than they do. Marco covers Rachel as she has to, like, back out of, like, a thin area between train cars. She can't turn around. And finds himself cut off and surrounded and already bleeding pretty bad. He got, like, a big gash in his shoulder. He like, King Kong roars, like, beats his chest because he's a gorilla, right? Beats his chest, roars, and puts up this big, like, machismo front for a second, and it makes the Hork-Bajir that are, like, surrounding him, like, take just a second of hesitation that lets him, like, jump up into a train and shut the door and then run out the other side. he finds a ladder that goes to the top of the train car, and he sees that the U-Haul has started moving.
This is just like Donkey Kong so far.
Yeah. And so Tobias leads Rachel and Marco through the train yard towards the U-Haul, like, on an intercept course for the U-Haul, but Marco can get there faster because he's, like, running on top of the trains and, like, jumping between trains.
Does he throw a barrel?
No, he doesn't have any barrels to throw. But hold on to that thought for just a moment.
I'm holding it.
So he jumps onto the moving truck off of a train, which is fucking rad. And then he climbs up to, like, the top of the cab, and he yanks off the door, and he goes to grab the driver, and the driver slams on the brakes and throws Marco, like, 40 feet in front of the truck. And then immediately the driver starts gunning it again, going to hit Marco. And Marco's on the ground. He can't get out of the way in time. But then a barrel doesn't get thrown, but an entire train car lands in front of the truck.
And that's then the same. Does it swerve out of the way or does it slam on its
brakes? No, it slams into the train car. And then Rachel is like, I got you, buddy. Like, and to be clear, because we know we don't try to kill human controllers, right?
Yeah.
The driver of the truck did survive.
Oh, good. Okay, great.
They make sure to let us know that this is not a case where we've killed a human.
Great.
They can't open the door to the truck, though. It's, like, stuck shut. So Gefinnerland comes over in Andalite form, and he's ching, big, ching, muscly ching. Tail, and just, yeah, cuts him out. Marco asks, are you okay, Myrtle? And Myrtle says, I am as I was. And Marco goes, oh, great, another Mr. Philosophy over here. And they escape to the woods. Myrtle says he's surprised that they would risk their lives for him, as he is, a V-Cole. And Cassie's like, what do you mean? I will explain, Axe said. He means he is surprised that we normal, healthy warriors risk our lives for a mere V-Cole. He paused, turned a stock eye to me, and added, or, as Marco says, someone who is differently abled. Geez, can't we just get over this issue, please? Rachel said. It's not like it's Myrtle's fault he got injured or that he has an allergy or something. Like, man, I can name a few people I know who are perfectly healthy and are also a total waste of oxygen, in my opinion. I'm down with that, I murmured. Myrtle and Gefinnerland remained silent. Axe, Jake said. You consider Gefinnerland a hero of Andalite culture, right? Axe nodded, one of his favorite adopted human gestures. Maybe the fact that he's able to overlook physical imperfection is one of the reasons he's a hero. What do you think? Prince Jake, I think the reason Gefinnerland is able to overlook his friend's deformities is because he sees through the eyes of friendship. This is exceptional behavior. Under ordinary circumstances, in general Andalite society, it is simply not natural to show such concern for a V-Cole. So friendship isn't natural? Rachel snapped. It's abnormal? What is normal anyway? Cassie asked rhetorically. Tobias glared. Okay, I'm getting a complex over here. I'm a Nothlet. A freak. Whatever. My best friend is an alien with blue fur. My girlfriend is human when she isn't in morph. How about we don't talk about normal anymore or average, please? More weird silence. I, for one, was dying to hear what would happen next. Myrtle Iskar Elmand, Axe said respectfully. It has been an honor to meet you. I will always remember you as you were. Well, it was a start. We should get out of here, Jake said. Gefinnerland, we'll help you and Myrtle get back. Thank you. And again, I saw the trembling I'd seen before, only worse, and I remembered Gefinnerland's not being sure that he'd seen the human me that first night, peering closely at his own printed labels in the greenhouse. He was going blind. When the trembling ceased, Gefinnerland went on. And then, you will be so kind as to let us be. My time is running out. I would like to end my days honorably and in the company of my dearest friend. Myrtle, who was no lousy specimen of Andalite warrior himself, stood tall. As Gefinnerland has cared for me, so now I will care for him. It is my duty. The Visser might not leave you alone, Jake pointed out. The Visser has proven that he is no use for either of us, Gefinnerland retorted. He's right, Jake, I said. If the Visser comes after anyone, it'll be us for spoiling his plans. Oh, goody, Cassie said dryly. You always know how to finish on a high note, Marco. So Marco reflects, like, a little bit in the kind of this last chapter about how people get labeled for, like, the obvious or, visible thing about them. Like, you could be a poet, you could be a scholar, right. But if you have only one arm, then you're the one-armed guy. You know what I mean?
They call you Stumpy.
Yeah. Sure. So like that's what people will see. And then we have this to the end. My mother was a host to Visser One, originator of the Yurk invasion of Earth. Everyone, including my dad and his new wife, think she's dead. Maybe she is, maybe she isn't. Maybe she can be saved, maybe she can't. I just don't know. After the last time we came face to face in a Taxon tunnel off the main Yurk pool during her trial by the Council of 13, Most times, I don't even pretend to want to know, though if a call comes again, well, I'll wait until that happens to decide, then I'll know what I have to do. Anyway, for the time being, I am the boy with a dead mother to the people on the outside. To my friends, I'm the kid with a big mouth and mother stolen by aliens. I can't get away from it. V-Cole, mentally challenged, handicapped, dumb, psycho. You just learn to live with it. Jake's the responsible leader. Rachel's the gorgeous warmongerer. Cassie's the tree hugger. Tobias the bird boy. Axe the resident alien. Gifinlan is the one with the fatal disease. And Myrtle. So we rescued Myrtle and agreed to leave him and Gifinlan in peace. We were pretty sure the Yerks were going to back away from them too, at least for a while. I mean, like Gifinlan said, what had either Andalite done for them? Nothing, except exhibited depth of loyalty, totally puzzling, totally incomprehensible to Visser III and his minions. So given the fact that, in the Yerk opinion, Gifinlan was, essentially, a dead man, and Myrtle was useless, we figured they stood a fair chance of living unmolested. At least until Gifinlan died, and Myrtle was all alone in Henry McClellan's house, unable to morph, a virtual prisoner in a foreign land. How would he survive? Maybe I shouldn't have done it. How often do I say that? A lot. Maybe I shouldn't have done it, but I did. I paid one last unauthorized visit to the McClellan house in Osprey form while Gifinlan was at work. I am not totally stupid. I found Myrtle in the greenhouse, called out to him from a distance so that he wouldn't be scared and zap me with a shredder, identified myself as the handsome gorilla from the other night. The others don't know I'm here, so I'd appreciate if this little visit is our secret. Of course, Myrtle answered, his voice a bit strained. I believe I owe you my life. Well, I don't know about that, I said, but look, I just want you to know, I mean, we just want you to know that if, when Gifinlan, you know, dies, that you should look us up. And, well, maybe I can check in on you too, play some video games, whatever. Being alone, man, it's not good, and, well, we could use all the allies we can get. Nothing. I shifted on my perch in the big old oak tree where Tobias had sat during our first visit to the house, noted a honeybee winging its way towards the greenhouse, and waited. Maybe I'd offended the guy somehow. I hadn't meant to, but sometimes my mouth gets in the way of sentiment. The silence was awful, and then, suddenly, his voice came booming out at me, strong and energetic and quivering with something that sounded a lot like pride. Thank you, Arist Marco. Perhaps I will do so. The end. Yeah, so we're tackling some bigger issues in this one.
Yeah, we're just like Star Trek. We will. I mean, it's funny. In that show, they'll, like, you know, make him very clearly aliens. Like, oh, we don't support Malaknock marriage there. You know what I mean? Yeah. But no, here it's just disabled. You know what I mean? Just, you know, make sure the kids still understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Future sadness. Not only does this event end in sadness, they will also know that this person will die someday. And then, you know, Moaning Myrtle or whatever is just going to be alone. So hopefully they join the ranks, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
The great action scene. Again, though, nothing changes on the galactic scale of anything.
The status quo remains,
Just our kids having to now deal with their own prejudices. But I mean, I guess that's what growing up is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's less the kids' prejudices in this one. It's Axe having to, you know, see again, like, oh, maybe the Andalite way isn't the best way?
Yeah, yeah.
Although I remain unconvinced that he was convinced.
Yeah, you know, I'm afraid Andalites might be Nazis. That being said, I have some other lessons that I learned, David. Uh-huh. So let's go to lessons.
Lessons.
Always bring a piece, a.k.a. a gun. You never know when things are going to pop off, and if you are strapping, you're going to be ready for action. I wrote, if you're crying on the inside, then ear cleaners are kind of like Kleenexes for inside your body. They'll get all the inside tears away.
What?
Because you said crying on the inside, so then if you cleaned your ears, they can get the tears on the inside of your body. Because they go inside your body.
But your tears don't come from your ears.
Yeah, but it's all connected, David. Ears, mouth, it's all connected.
Listen,
I'm going to tell you.
That one was a stretch.
Well, David, I'll tell you what's not a stretch. That Crips go hard. We live in a town with many a gangs, okay? We got Bloods, we got MS-13. Be careful who you're speaking to. I learned the lesson of you got to learn the woods. You know, there's a map is great and so is GPS, but if you can learn real life advantages, you can be a tree man. Oh, get those gains, okay? I know it's tough, but you look good with a little muscle definition. Get out there, get at it, get them muscles, get them, get shredded.
Okay, I hear you, Jesus.
Head trauma is real. Even though someone might not hit you with a sword, if they hit your head with a bat, you are going to be hurt.
Yeah.
Not all unsolved mysteries. Many of them are solved mysteries. I feel they really need a different title on those episodes because sometimes they fix the problem. I wrote, it's very hard to forget. You'll say don't remember it. I remember it. The moment you told me not to to forget something, I'm going to remember it even more.
Oh, I see. That was when the guy was like, forget you ever saw me. I gotcha. Yeah.
And then I wrote, I learned the lesson, don't always see too much. Sometimes it's good to go through life with some blinders on. If you don't want to be involved with the police, don't look over towards the crime, because then they'll ask you, what did you see? And you'll say, I didn't see anything. So don't see too much.
I don't know what. Okay.
I learned the lesson. You got to know your sex. You can't just go around offering two bones for the price of one.
That's a lesson that you had to teach yourself.
And I also taught myself that you got to work with what you know, okay?
Yeah.
Don't work on what you don't know. If you know it, get a job in it. You're going to be great at it because it's what you know.
You've had that almost exact lesson before.
David, don't make assumptions is what I learned. You think you know things about people. You want to make a judgment call about how they look.
Yeah.
Look on the inside.
Yeah.
I wrote that I decorate because I am a human. It's one of our defining characteristics as a species. If you go into someone's house and it's not decorated, get out of there. They might not be a human. But if you see some floral carpets or like a runway carpet to keep your feet warm on a cold winter's day, a human being lives there.
Yeah. I've been slowly adding to the decoration in my place lately.
I wrote, pearls before swine is wasted, but pearls on a horse, well, that's a very handsome horse. You can clearly see them. They're going to look great. Maybe some freshwater pearls so they're not so expensive.
I'm going to say that was because I talked about the Andalites having a reaction akin to clutching pearls.
David, you gotta do the right, okay? Just like the big man says, there's a right and a wrong, and you gotta do with what the right is. I learned the lesson, it's okay to take a bump of a root. If someone's like, hey, you wanna try some of this? You're like, yeah, cut up that
give
fucking
me a
carrot.
Bit of that.
Let me a little bit of that carrot. This is, I'm sure I've said this lesson before, but I'm gonna say it now. Trust your gut. If something seems off, go with your intuition about it. I wrote, sometimes the conversation about the birds and the bees is just literally about birds and bees. You know, you think everything's an innuendo or something like that. No, sometimes I'm just referring to the bees and the birds outside of my apartment and the things that they are doing. I learned the lesson, communism isn't the answer, okay? A lot of you kids think, oh, it just hasn't been implemented correctly. That's not it. It's a failed system. Lots of people died. Listen, I don't think
the bees are dying. See, it's not working out for them.
I don't think, David, they're dying in droves, okay?
Yeah, but they're dying because of capitalism.
Listen, I don't think capitalism is the answer either, but we need a third option, not just these binary choices. Just the tip is scarier than you think, okay?
Whether
it be the tip of a knife or a life or death situation, this can lead to some big consequences. Everyone, take care of your stink particles. You know they're there. Give yourself a little. You got to wash them off, okay?
Yeah.
A washcloth, something. Get out of there. Pay attention to no soliciting signs. If they don't want knocks at their door, you're going to get an earful if you go knocking your tailblade on that door. I wrote, we are all children at one point. So when you judge somebody, know that at one point they were a child, okay? Maybe see them in that light to make sure it makes things a little bit easier. I learned the lesson that you can't come clean, okay? It's going to be of a bodily substance. Do your business, then clean it up afterwards, okay? You can't just assume that the substance coming out of you is going to be some sort of Clorox cleaning liquid. I'm here to tell you it is not.
I have no idea what you're talking about with that one.
I wrote, don't judge. I wrote, vehicle matters.
Yes.
I wrote, support black comedy. Cat Williams is getting back out there. Yep. Listen to what he has to say. Maybe it's funny. If it's not, that's fine, but support black comedy.
Because Marco talked about gallows humor. Good Lord.
And then my last one, we learned about, you know, people are always going to be judged and be called by what they look like, which is difficult. Dumbface David Miller knows all about that. But the last thing I wrote is let people die in peace with all of their guns around them, David, okay? If I'm going out, I want to feel safe up until the very last minute, and then you can take my guns from my cold, dead fingers, just like he said.
I don't want your guns.
Well, I'm dead. I can't do anything with them now, so you can take them and resell them all you want to, just like I do in all of our RPGs.
Yeah.
That was book 40. You already gave us a teaser of that black cover, but let's tease it one more time.
All right, so this is, next time will be Megamorphs number 4, Back to Before.
Okay, I'm going to do some predictions now.
While I'm standing in a really angsty shadow, black and white sort of
thing. Yeah, and there's...
And the inside is, okay, so first of all, there's like a sort of desolated cityscape looking sort of time. And then we've got a sort of fold out with all the kids and
battle morphs.
Notable morphs, yeah.
I wonder if we're going to see a what if tale if they had conquered Earth or something like that. Mm. Because it goes back to the before, so maybe before they came. Audience, for those of you, I mean, you should be listening to all of these, but the Megamorph books are usually pretty nuts. So yeah. I am excited for a nuts adventure.
Yeah.
If you have nuts adventures and you would like to tell us about it, hit us up on that email address, but I'm not saying it here. You have to listen to last week's episode where we very clearly dropped it.
TheStoryTimePod@gmail.com.
David, is there any more news that we need to share with people?
No.
Then that's all the news that fits. The one who's a crack reporter, always getting the story out before deadline. Well, that's David Miller.
And the one who only ever reports on crack. Well, that's Michael Santel.
I got a story to tell. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see all you kids and cats next time.
Okay.
Bye.
That's our show. Thanks for coming round. Don't be sad. No need to frown. We'll have more stories. Don't throw a fit. Goodbye, one and all, and we'll see you in a bit.
Sierra, we're in the middle of story time.
It's okay.
Oh, sorry.
Bye. Hi, I love you.
I love you too.
I'll see you later.
I guess I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
You need to talk to her. Go ahead and talk to her.
No, we got concert tickets. It's nothing of importance. I should have.